I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. One guest this week, and a conversation I am looking forward to. Sean Keeley is the Editorial Strategy Director at Comeback Media. Comeback Media includes Awful Announcing and Comeback. He is the creator of Noon's Magician, which is a very popular blog on Syracuse University. If you happen to be listening to this and you're a Syracuse alum, I'm positive you have heard of that. A really well-known and well-respected blog in that space. Last week, he wrote a piece, What Happens to Sports Media If Twitter Dies? Great piece on Awful Announcing. I totally recommend it. And that will be the topic of our conversation today. Before I introduce Sean, or bring Sean in, I should say, I don't know if I'm done through this at the top, but I did want to just sort of note two things. One, since the last podcast, news came out that Brittany Griner has been sent to a Russian penal colony to serve a sentence. And, you know, we have had TJ Quinn on this podcast a number of times, as well as Dr. Danny Gilbert, hostage expert when it comes to this stuff, a number of times on that topic. Obviously, people know I covered women's basketball for a long time. So, you know, as a sort of citizen of the United States, it should piss you off to the highest level. I mean, the sentence is a total fraud. The entire justice, if that's even the right word of that, was an absolute disgrace. It's a fucking American being held captive in a foreign country. So continue to read about it would be my sort of advice. There's obviously not much those of us can do who are not involved in any potential negotiations, but I just hope that story does not go away. I mean, again, it is an American citizen wrongfully in prison being sent to a Russian penal colony. And then Fred Hickman, who for a brief time with Nick Charles at CNN Sports, went head-to-head with ESPN and found a lot of viewers watching him and Nick Charles as opposed to ESPN, sort of a WCW-ish against the big WWF battle. He passed away this week. And so and a shout-out and acknowledgement to his very groundbreaking career. All right, and with that, let me bring in Sean Keeley, the editorial strategy director at Comeback Media and the author of the piece I just cited, What Happens to Sports Media If Twitter Dies? Sean, welcome to the Sports Media Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me on.
All right, let's start here. What prompted you to write the piece?
Well, in two words, Elon Musk. But in a larger sense, you know, as you said, you know, I used to run a Syracuse site, and that dates back to 2005. And you know, I remember that was back before the days of Twitter and really promoting yourself on social media and that becoming such a part of it. And so I just was noticing that, you know, there's all these doom and gloom pieces out there, and we're watching Elon make these big proclamations, and you know, everybody's looking around and saying there's no way any of this is going to work, right? Like, and so thinking about how Twitter has been such an institution in the sports media world for you know, well over a decade now. And intrinsically tied to your site. Like, you know, when I was running the Syracuse site, there came a point where there wasn't really much of a difference between my Twitter account and the site. And so, you know, knowing how connected that is and knowing how many people in the sports media world use Twitter, rely on Twitter, engage with their audience on Twitter, build their brand on Twitter, it just seemed like, wow, if and when Twitter goes away, and if it were to go away in a hurry, that's going to have a seismic impact on the world of sports media in a lot of different ways. And so that was kind of the impetus to want to reach out to some people and get their thoughts on it.
And we're gonna talk about the piece, and then me and you sort of can go back and forth. So you reached out to a number of people who are currently part of the sports media ecosystem or industry. Action Network's Brett McMurphy, ESPN's David Hale, The Athletic's Chris Vanini, Syracuse.com's Donna, am I pronouncing her name right? DeTota?
DeTota.
How do you pronounce her last name? DeTota, okay. Frederick Nationals announcer Joey Zanabani, and then B-Known's Brendan Kaminsky. And what you did, and this is really smart, you got an insider, you got someone from ESPN, you got a national writer, you got a local writer, you got a broadcaster, and then Brendan Kaminsky's job as social media agency founder. So these are all people within the same like universe writ large, but they all have different jobs, and they all sort of either cover or are part of different things. What did you find, Sean? What were they saying to you when you asked them about Twitter's value for them, what Twitter has meant to them, and what could possibly happen if it goes away?
Yeah, and I should say that, you know, even in reaching out to all of those different types of people, there are still so many other types of sports media people from different backgrounds and, you know, different jobs. And so so by no means is this the complete picture, but I wanted to reach out to as many different people as I could, in these different outlets, because what I learned pretty quickly is pretty much everyone has a different view on how important Twitter is, what they use it for, and how they would feel if it were to go away. You know, in speaking with Chris, who, you know, is a national writer, covers college football for The Athletic, you know, he, for him, it was not only is Twitter, you know, he basically credited it as being the reason he's in the position he's in today, but also, you know, credited it as kind of an RSS feed for the sports world for him, you know, where he immediately has access to every beat writer around the country, every college football program. You know, it taps him in to the world that he's covering in a way that is just much harder without Twitter. And so for him, it was really interesting to see how it was both sides of it, you know. And he also talked about how, you know, sports Twitter, which is, you know, this thing that is its own ecosystem, and how that is an experience unto itself, being on Twitter on college football Saturday or NFL Sunday, and how that is such a critical part of the experience for not just people in sports media, but just sports fans in general. And then you have Joey Zanabani, who, if people don't know, he went viral a bunch of times on Twitter for his imaginative minor league baseball calls. And he says that Twitter is basically the reason he has a job now in AAA. And his dream is to become a major league baseball broadcaster. And he felt like without Twitter, I wouldn't be this close to it. And so for him, it was more of a promotional tool and a way to get his name out there. And then, you know, I thought it was really interesting that for Donna, being the beat reporter for the Syracuse basketball team, her point of view is that, you know, it's good, it's interesting, it's good to connect and all that, but it's not critical. You know, for her, she said that if she wants to get breaking news from players, she's more likely to find it on Instagram, because that's where they're going to announce their big news or their NIL deal or something like that. And so for her, it wasn't quite the same thing. So yeah, across the board, it was really interesting to see just how, for some people it was, you know, almost, it feels like it would be this almost catastrophic loss. And for other people, like Brett McMurphy said, you know, we'll just move on to the next thing, just like we did when Twitter got here.
I will eventually, I'll get into my own sort of thoughts on that. And at least some people on who listen to this podcast know I did take a Twitter respite for 7 months, and then the 2 months I guess I've been active, I've been barely active. So I have some thoughts on that. You know, Sean, let us hope we're going to put this conversation out tomorrow, but I think neither of us can guarantee that that there won't be major news coming out of Twitter like by the time like we end taping, and you can start to hear this already today as we're taping this on November 10th. There is seemingly more internal turmoil when it comes to high level Twitter positions. One of the things though that we have seen when it comes to sports is since the service Twitter Blue now has allowed you to be verified, get a blue check mark, whatever nonsense that even means. You get that thing. We have seen Adam Schefter, LeBron James, I think Aroldis Chapman. You probably are probably more in tune here in terms of the growing list of people who've been impersonated. But this has happened. And at least I think in the terms of Schefter's one, there, you know, it was a fake Schefter who reported that the Raiders had fired their NFL head coach, and like a significant number of people put that out there. How do you view in the micro what's going on right now with a little bit of a free-for-all here with all these sort of changes specific to the site?
Yeah, I mean, I will say from an internal level, we at Comeback Media had a whole conversation yesterday about like, okay, our system for identifying a tweet that is breaking news or a tweet from a verified person who we feel like we can trust to share that tweet in our work, that system is gone. It's very clear that moving forward, it's going to be, you're going to have laser focus on who you're getting your information from and whether or not the person saying this breaking news is actually the person, that they say that it claims that they are. And on one hand, those of us who have been on Twitter and in the sports world for a long time, we have built up a bit of a callus to this. You know, who among us hasn't been fooled at some point, at least initially, by a fake Adam Schefter, you know, saying that some crazy news. So it's not like this is coming out of nowhere. For a lot of people who are in sports media and on sports Twitter, we're used to this. You know, there's Ballsack Sports, which was, you know, made headlines. I feel like every few months they catch out somebody goes on ESPN and talks about something that Ballsack Sports reported, you know, that LeBron James said. So, and now they're verified. So, it's a wild west. I think maybe we fooled ourselves a little bit into thinking it wasn't the wild west before, or at least we kind of, you know, there was the idea of guardrails. And so I think in the short term, there are no guardrails, and we'll see what happens, you know, from here. Obviously, you know, they're banning these accounts as they come up, but that's not an ideal system. That's not how it's supposed to work. It shouldn't be incumbent on the customer to be the one to figure out how to spot a credible account from a non-credible one. But for now, at least, that's the system we're being given.
You know, Twitter's been a lot of things when it comes to sort of sports Twitter. To me, the two greatest things about it were, one, it offered you a gatekeeping ability. I don't know if that's the right word, but it basically gave you access to all the great pieces of information or content, like directly funneled to you, where once upon a time, like it would have been impossible to, like, you know, go through every local newspaper or something like that and pick out like what's the most interesting or greatest sports story of the day. Like, sort of Twitter's ability to sort of customize like all these great people and minds and pieces, like there was nothing like it. There still has been nothing like that. So that's part one. The other thing, and I imagine Sean, you'll agree with me on this one, is there is, or was, I don't know if the is part is still the same, certainly was, nothing better when there was a big moment in sports than to sort of be part of this like gigantic ecosystem. You know what I mean? Like to be part of this like sports bar and everybody sort of weighing in on, oh my God, did you see that? Or, you know, or just sort of like what their take was or what their mem was. Like, you felt like you were so current and you felt like you were part of something so much bigger than you. And sports is one of the few things that can do that anyway, just in terms of the communal nature of it. But those are the two things I've sort of always loved and appreciated about it. So those are the utilities for me. When you think of sports Twitter, what do you think of when it comes to like the utility of it?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. If you're watching a big event, like a big game, and you're on Twitter and you've got all the people who are in that sports Twitter world, whether it's college football or whatever it is, and a big play happens and your Twitter feed just becomes a stream of expletives and oh my God and all that stuff, and everybody's kind of sharing that moment together, and then the memes break out and people start sharing the clips, and it's great. It's very communal and really fun, and it makes you feel very connected to a lot of people who, you know, you share a commonality with, and that's great. On the flip side, you know, whether you're in sports media or you're just someone who consumes sports, you know, on a daily basis, I think Twitter is a great resource. And, you know, if you take the time to customize it and, you know, block out the people you don't want to hear from and mute accounts, you know, and all that stuff, if you put in a little bit of work, you can create a feed for yourself that gives you the information that you want. You get a really good sense of what the people in your bubble are, you know, are thinking about and talking about. You know, I think there's always a good, healthy reminder that Twitter is often not real life or how the rest of the world thinks. And, you know, as long as you keep that in mind, I think you can build an environment in Twitter that, yeah, is a great resource, is a way to stay connected to sports and the things that you're interested in, and it's a community. I think at the end of the day, I always kind of feel like most social media platforms are, when you truly break them down, they're message boards. And Twitter is a message board that you customize to have a conversation with the people that you want to have conversations with.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right, let's get into value a little bit. And then I do want to get into at least sort of just one part of it, which is the real negative part of it. And that's the sort of horrific experience, particularly for women when it comes to sports Twitter, people of color. It can be, and that's not limited to quote unquote sports Twitter. That's many times Twitter itself. And maybe sports Twitter is a better experience in that sense. But again, this is where sort of Twitter can be horrible. But in terms of value, you know, this is something you talked about with your panel, right? And Chris Vanini was the one who said that, like, I wouldn't have a career without this. And it sort of gets to, and I think in your management position, you would have great insight into this. When I first started Twitter back in, I think, 2009, Sports Illustrated in particular, maybe not 2009, but certainly like 2012 or 11 or 13, we were pushed, Sean, so hard to be on Twitter. It became almost like a cultish like mantra that you had to like sort of start getting a presence on there. And it was going to be incredibly important for the traffic and incredibly important for visibility. And, you know, this Sports Illustrated wasn't alone here. Like, you literally saw everybody do it, whether you were at a legacy media place like I was, or you were starting a blog like you did. That's changed though. And I think both of us know this just from the metrics. Like, the metrics that you get from sort of posting something on Twitter are really not very good anymore. And so the visibility part, like, I think is still important, right? Like, you want people to know your work and you want people to know that you exist. But the reality, I mean, this is my experience, and I'd be curious yours, but I think we're probably going to be similar here because trends are trends. like the value in 2022 of like posting something on there is nowhere near of what it used to be when you would post something, let's say 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. And I think definitely from a traffic generation perspective, if we're just talking about like, yeah, driving traffic to your site.
You're right. I should be specific.
Yeah, exactly. That it is not that anymore. And that's not really what Twitter is about. Or maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe it never was, I'm not sure. But I think that, it has kind of evolved into just now this is just the space where we all hang out. And, and like you said, it's not always positive. And there's definitely a lot of people who have to put up with a lot of BS that that other people don't. And, I do remember that time when it was like, it is essential to be on Twitter. And I wouldn't say it feels that way anymore, even before Elon bought it. I've definitely seen a lot of people who used to be, I used to note all the time on my timeline who either have disappeared or kind of just chime in every once in a while. And the options back then, it was like Twitter, Facebook, that maybe Instagram, that was kind of it, as like the major social media outlets. Now, we, like so many other things, we've gotten so much more segmented. And so you can go to Substack and, that's where you're generating, people, readers, and you're engaging a bit more with a curated community. TikTok is its own thing. It just feels like the days when Twitter felt essential because it wasn't the only game in town, but it kind of felt like it if you were in the media world and sports media, to not be on Twitter was to be missing out on something. And yeah,
you're dead.
Oh yeah. Right. You didn't exist.
Professionally
speaking, you didn't exist for a period there. And that's not the case now.
So here's what I want to sort of run by you, because this is where I think that the value was, and maybe still is, but I'd love to get your thought on this. Undoubtedly, like you said, there was value, and value that you could monetize on your own, to being on there with some kind of following. Every place I worked at pushed it. There is absolutely no doubt that part of the reason The Athletic wanted me in 2018 was for my Twitter following. I mean, my God, did any of us go there without writing why I joined The Athletic and putting that on Twitter? Like literally everybody did that. In terms of my feed itself, there were a couple of things that turbocharged me. One was in, I don't remember the year. I'm not even trying to be like false modesty here. Like maybe it was 2012 or 2013, but I posted a photo of Steve Bennett of Sportscasters who, he was with his brother who had just won a title at Yale. And, asked the question, do you have a photo of the greatest moment of your life? And people started sending me this stuff and it went viral. I got a lot of attention for it, but it really it sort of juiced my Twitter following way, way above some knucklehead sports person should have had. Again, had some very stupid Twitter wars with Darren Revelle and some others, and that pushed my Twitter following higher. A lot of attaboy kind of stuff like that. And yes, trolling Skip Bayless with the absurd comparisons of how Undisputed did against Paw Patrol and others, same thing. But the point was that I was able to, Sean, monetize that. I have to be honest with the audience. I can't tell you what the exact ROI was, but there's just no doubt that The Athletic was interested in that in the same way Sports Illustrated was interested in it. I remember having contract negotiations at both places. The management both brought up my Twitter following. It was a fact that existed within their ecosystem. So I think that still has value. And if you are like Adrian Wojnarowski or Sham Sharnaya or Adam Schefter or people like these insiders with crazy followings, that is the reason they are multimillionaires. It's not their skill set, which I'm not saying is not big. It's the fact that they have their own distribution engine. So in terms of value, that's where I think the value still exists, whether followers are real or not, or bots or not. Do you know what I'm saying? Management still thinks that that matters. And if that matters to management, that means you can get paid for that.
Yeah, I mean, and it makes sense, right? I mean, management, you know, the executive level is always going to be a little bit behind the trend in terms of what, you know, it's like we see in Hollywood where, you know, they beat a trend into the ground, whereas everybody's kind of moved on. But no, I mean, we again, like, this is decades worth of thinking that Adam Schefter signs that $9 million contract extension. And a lot of that has to be related to the fact that he's going to use that Twitter following to jam breaking news out there, or, you know, like, just anything he tweets, like, that becomes a big deal. And, you know, we've seen Woj, you know, there was a report that he was sending around a packet to potential sources, basically saying, look, here's my Twitter following. Here's how many more followers I have than every other person who is breaking NBA news. Like, you should be working with me because of my social media following. So yeah, it is baked into how we perceive the value of those people. And I think, you know, I think, you know, with some of the people that I spoke with, it would probably say this more, you know, some more than others, but I definitely think there are people who work in the sports media world where, when we think of their value, we think of their Twitter following. And if they don't, if, you know, if they have a job in one place and they decide to move on, you know, another company might hire them simply because of the perceived reach that, or the value of those Twitter followers. But it is kind of crazy thinking about what is that even going to matter in like 6 months? You know, we don't know what adventures Elon is taking us on, but it's kind of crazy to think that from an industry perspective, we have people whose value is tied up in their Twitter following, and that could essentially be meaningless within the next year.
So yeah, I want to get into that, because I just sort of for clarification, people, in the event that they care, the question I asked was, how many of you have a photograph of the single best moment of your life? Which I must admit, in 2013 was a pretty good question to ask on Twitter. And then the pitch deck that I think it was reported that Wojnarowski's agents, which would have been CAA, sent to places, reported by Ethan Strauss and his Substack. So let me ask you, Sean, like, is there, if what so if I mean, again, we'll eventually get into this. Like, neither of us know what's going to happen to Twitter. If you had to ask me today, the only sure bet I would make is Elon Musk is not going to be the owner in 2024. Other than that, I don't think I would bet on anything, because I don't know. But if this went away, and eventually we'll get to alternatives, but if this goes away, so what does that mean for people who have significant and large followings? And what does it mean for people who have, like the people we mentioned, the Wojnarowski types and others? I mean, myself, let's be blunt. Like, what will it mean for those people who have monetized this medium?
Yeah, yeah.
Because of whatever that count is. And by the way, that's probably like that's tens of thousands, because I think Awful Announcing has done that. I think the New York Times has done that. You know what I mean? Like Colin Cowherd's radio show, any ESPN personality. So it's if that does go away, man, that's not an insignificant thing when it comes to sports Twitter.
No, and it's a huge ripple effect. And keeping in mind, like you said, we have absolutely no idea what's happening. I think it's easy, and I definitely fall into this trap with every day's new news about what's happening over there, that this is going to go away like next week. More likely it's going to be more of a trickle, and things will start to break and systems will break down, and like, you know, the trust in that. And so to me, I see it as this big ripple effect where, you have this whole breaking news industrial complex, which is built around Twitter, and how that is going to have to completely remake itself. And I don't really know what that looks like. I don't know if they decide, well, we're just going to go back to breaking the news on our networks or on our website and, you know, focus on that.
Right.
You know, the thing I think is really fascinating is TikTok, while it is a completely different animal to Twitter, you know, we've seen how massive it is. We've seen how popular it is. It's very clearly here to stay, you know, at least, you know, for as much as you can say that about any social media platform. But nobody, as far as I can tell, has really planted a flag over there in the same way. Not that I can ever imagine Woj being like a TikTok star, but like I'm intrigued by the fact that Adam Schefter doesn't have like a thriving TikTok presence. I'm curious to know why they haven't done that yet, or doesn't seem to be in the works. And, you know, I think,
do you think that would be cannibalizing what they ultimately do, which is a visual, it's a visual company at the end of the day, more than a print company, using print/digital.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think some of it is a lot of us on sports Twitter, we're here because it's writing. We're writers, but even though these people are on TV, like we're coming from a background where it's about these like bite-sized pieces of information or writing out the information. It's real quick. And
right.
The
value isn't, I need to watch Adam Schefter or Wojnarowski like say what the information is. The value is the information itself.
Right. Yeah. But the interesting thing is like, TikTok's influence is now, you know, from what we're hearing, Elon wants to incorporate that kind of video back into Twitter.
Right, with Vine.
Yeah, all the other platforms are trying to kind of emulate TikTok. And so social media, you know, the quote-unquote pivot to video is happening. And so you kind of, I'm surprised that there isn't more of a, all right, well, this is what's coming. This is where it's going right now. And so, that's probably a conversation, you know, unto itself. But to get back to your point, I think, when that breaking news industrial complex kind of breaks down, that changes so much because it affects the sports Twitter conversation. A lot of people don't, you know, think about the aggregate news complex. You know, everybody on ESPN loves to complain about that. That's going to completely change the way those sites work. You know, we do some of that as well, where you're just gathering up tweets and you're looking for instant reactions. And if that's not happening on Twitter, where is that conversation happening? Where is all that going to happen? And so, the answer is, I don't know. And I don't know that anybody knows, but the one thing to remember is, the sports media world existed before Twitter. It will exist after Twitter. There was always going to come a time where Twitter is no longer this centralized community that galvanizes sports media. It will exist. You know, obviously the conversation will exist elsewhere. But as far as where, I really have no idea.
Yeah, that we'll finish with that. The one thing I did want to get to. So, you know, we have seen away from quote unquote sports Twitter, like advertisers start to get very jittery about this company. And you can't blame them. You, if you're investing significant money into a social media site, you can't have, you can't have your like product next to like anti-Semitism or racist commentary and stuff like that. It's the sort of the same thesis that like, back in the day, no alcohol company would ever want to be next to a editorial story that involved like, drunk driving or something like that. Like just advertisers they're not going to do that. In your opinion, how would you define sort of the Twitter experience when it comes to the negative side of it, harassment, and just everything that sort of, you know, sexism, racism, all that stuff, everything that that can ultimately be the worst of one of these social media sites when unchecked. They've all, including Twitter, have sort of said that they police it and it's important to them. But I think me and you, in all honesty, Sean, we've had it easy in terms of our Twitter experience versus obviously many women, particularly women in our business or people of color. You have to be honest with the audience here. It's been a different experience if you are white and male on Twitter. I'm asking you to sort of look at it like from a broader picture, even though you may yourself have not experienced this stuff.
Yeah, it's there's no way around it. It's terrible. And, definitely as a white cis male, I have not had to deal with 0.1% of the things that a lot of other women and people of color and people from LGBTQ backgrounds have had to deal with. And, you know, I think we all know that there are opportunities for managing the kinds of comments that we allow and the kind of interactions where that get flagged and all of that. And I think we also know at this point that the people who buy and own these platforms aren't interested in really policing that stuff as well as they should.
Great point.
And, Mr. Free Speech himself, Elon Musk he's clearly focused more on punishing people who make fun of him than he is punishing anybody who's going to harass women or, do anything like that. So I don't expect that to change, unfortunately. And, you know, if there's a solution for it, where we could actually have those honest realities, come into play, I unfortunately don't know, just based on the way the power structure works right now.
Solution wise, I don't know if there can be a solution if you're laying off, 3,000 workers or whatever it is, including people who have the institutional knowledge, right, of how to combat this. So I feel like I feel like he's already told you sort of what he thinks about this. That would be my top down take.
No, you're right. He's made it very clear what his priorities are, and policing harassment and threats and all that stuff is not high on it. And so, yeah, that's a huge part. And it's also one part of why this thing's probably going to go downhill in a hurry, because not that this is in any way the same thing, but Wednesday's whole thing where we were seeing all these fake accounts pop up with the fake news, that kind of ties back to that level of, trust or safety that you feel using this platform. Right. And, ultimately, if you don't feel safe when you log into Twitter and you don't feel like you can trust what you're seeing, you're going to be like, why am I here? What's the point?
All right. This will lead us to sort of like, what possibly could be next. Is there even a next? Again, you'd be a fool to sort of predict what is going to happen with Twitter. And again, as I said earlier, the only thing I would predict, I don't even know, Sean, if you can bet on this in Vegas, but if you could, I would bet there will be a different owner of Twitter in 2024. It's the only thing that I feel confident with. I don't think Musk is in this for the long haul. I think at a certain point he's going to try to get out after taking a financial bloodbath. That would be my prediction. But we'll see. He certainly has built some incredible companies. I don't think this one is fixable. Personally, you don't need to be a Wall Street genius to realize it's not a very good financial deal. So you have all these people, millions and millions of people who are really into sports Twitter. Like they're in, whatever they're into. If they're into information, they're into making jokes, they're into doing memes, they're, whatever it is, they're like, they exist. And they're going to want a place to be heard. And so the question is, like, can there be, Sean, an alternative? I haven't been on enough of these, Mastodon type places to sort of see, like, could any of these places sort of emerge as the next Twitter? But let me just ask you, like, broad stroke, like, do you think there will be one? If I had this conversation with you in 2027 and Twitter did go down, Is there another place where you have millions of sports fans in some kind of social media ecosystem chatting, talking, and doing what they do on Twitter every day?
Yeah, I guess my answer would be maybe kinda. I think, you know, I feel like for those of us who have been on the internet, grew up on the internet or have worked on it for a long time, my personal opinion is that everything is cyclical. And you see it play out in every platform. We saw the same cycle that played out in sports blogs, is the same cycle that played out on YouTube, is the same cycle that played out on podcasting, is the same. And it just keeps, to me, it keeps doing the same thing over and over again, where eventually, you know, kind of like with streaming on TV, like where eventually it becomes, everything gets centralized under one big company, and then it fractures out, and we see kind of the reaction is either other large companies creating their own version or tiny communities propping up and kind of curating their experience. And so my best guess is that Twitter will be here in some form. I think you're right. I think Elon's going to get real tired of this real quick and pass it off to somebody else, or, you know, just hand the keys to somebody and walk away. And I think it'll still be here, but it's probably not going to be what it was. And I think we're just going to see a bit of a fracturing of, you know, big companies trying to emulate the experience the best they can, while a lot of people kind of move towards more curated, smaller communities, you know, whether that's like a Substack community, like newsletter thing, which I know they're trying to kind of incorporate more tools right now, whether that's Reddit, whether that's, you know, something we don't know yet. My only thing I'll say about Mastodon, and I'm no expert, I tried to go over there and figure it out as an alternative. And it was, to me, it was so convoluted, and I just had a really hard time figuring it out. And I think one of the things that made Twitter successful early on was how easy it was to just sign up and get going. And I think that's going to be that's the thing I'm looking for in the next big thing, whatever it's going to be. It's going to be the thing that's real easy for all of us, especially those of us who are getting older, to just kind of move over real quickly and find the things that we want and recognize some faces and like, okay, I see that guy's and that woman's over here. Like I feel comfortable, and, you know, or I feel like I kind of understand what's happening. And that's my best guess, is that's the kind of platform that's going to be able to emulate Twitter to whatever that looks like.
Last one for me, and it's just more of a thought bubble exercise. Do you think there would be any big place? I mean, really, maybe would almost have to be ESPN, given its size and magnitude and stuff. But do you think any place, and, you know, let's even go a little smaller, LA Times sports section, or the Ringer or something like that, you know, whatever. Do you think any place in the next like 6 months will just be like, we're done? We're asking our employees to you don't have to post here anymore. In fact, anything that you have or any thoughts, we're going to set up an internal system where, you know, we want you to do this. You know what I mean? Like, do you see any place sort of give the signal to be the first mover to be like, we're out, we're done, we're not going to be part of this? Because that could lead to an interesting scenario in sports Twitter if some of those places sort of first moved. I'm not saying, in fact, I don't think that would happen in the near term, but I wonder for you, do you think anybody would think about that and be like the first sort of mover out of here if especially if things get a little more disjointed, like corporately with this company?
Well, I think I correct me if I'm wrong, I think I saw this morning NPR put out a note to all of their people saying, keep your Twitter handle, but you don't have to go on there anymore.
And I didn't say, I'll look at that. I'll interest, but that's what I'm, these are like, that's sort of the thing I'm starting to look for, to see if any of these particularly big / legacy type companies like put it into the public that we have a new directive for our employees, and here's what, you know, yeah. what I'm saying? Here's what we're saying. Cause then that becomes a story. And then in many ways, maybe that becomes self-fulfilling if all these other places start to follow the lead. So NPR is obviously would be on the news side. So what I'm thinking about is there anybody, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Is there anybody on the sports side who sort of steps into that breach?
I mean, I have to think so, because I think, yeah, if NPR is doing it, and I think other places are not, especially now that money is involved in Twitter, you know, to the, where like, if I think I saw somebody say, like, if you wanted to get every single reporter at the LA Times verified for a year, it would cost like thousands of dollars. And so like, yeah. is that ultimately going to be worth it for you? And, you know, I'm sure people are going to make the calculations that, well, why don't we just invest that money in our own thing, and like encouraging people to, you know, come to us where we're trying to generate our own revenue. So yeah, absolutely. I think especially as the trust and the safety break down further, I think that is going to be the signal to a lot of these companies to be like, hey, maybe while we're waiting for the next Twitter to come around, we kind of bring everybody back in house and let's try and get people to come to us.
Yeah. I mean, I would just, you know, I think my audience is pretty savvy enough to know this. I would be very careful at the moment of giving your credit card numbers to that company, just with all the news floating out and privacy and security people quitting. Just, you know, be cautious here would be my counsel. Sean Keeley is the editorial strategy director at Comeback Media. That includes Awful Announcing as well as The Comeback. Again, he wrote a great piece, What Happens to Sports Media If Twitter Dies. That's on Awful Announcing. I guarantee it will not be the last piece that Sean writes on this. And as someone who's read him for a long time, I think he's just like got a really good, like, broad view of things related to the sports media. He's sort of able to see something either micro or macro and then explain it on either side in terms of what it might mean for you as a reader or a listener or a viewer. Sean, man, I really enjoyed this. You know, we've never met in person, but I've been reading you a long time, and I got great admiration for what you do. Thanks so much for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast.
Thank you, and thanks to Twitter for connecting us, ultimately.
Don't die, Twitter. We need you for the connectivity. There you go. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Sean for a great conversation. I appreciate his time and insight. Really interesting topic. And I have no doubt we'll be talking about sports Twitter again, probably much sooner than later. You can head to the archives if you like these kind of conversations. Last couple, author Jeff Perlman on his new Bo Jackson book, World Cup Preview with Grant Wall. Had a conversation with Adam Amin of Fox Sports and Adnan Burke of MLB Network. Places. Jamel Hill is on this podcast to talk about her memoir, James Andrew Miller, on where ESPN stands in 2022. If you like these conversations, please leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. One, it's just very cool that you appreciate the content, and two, it certainly has great meaning to the people who are partners on this podcast, Cadence 13. I want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work, as always. Thanks to everybody at Cadence 13 for their support, and thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.